During the breaks, let me just mention something. So during the breaks, they're networking breaks. They're not just potty breaks. Hopefully it doesn't take you 30 minutes to go potty. Something's wrong with the food if that's happening. But what you need to do during that time, number one, is meet people, right? Meet other people. I know that everybody here, or a lot of people here, are shy and you don't want to meet. Go meet other people, right? Inside of the little concierge station, they serve alcohol. Like, drink an alcohol and then go talk to people. Whatever it takes. Not talk too much, but go meet with other people. Go see the sponsors, right? Can we close the doors, please? If we can get the doors closed so we can have some... thank you. Hey, those of you that are helping me close the doors, I'm buying your lunch today. I'm buying your lunch today. So you get a free lunch on me. You get seconds, actually. So, okay. I'm still waiting on a piece of paper, and once I get that piece of paper, what was that? But digits, pretty darn cool, right? Yeah. How many of you have already sent your email off to digits and done? Yeah. The rest of you, what are you waiting on? Like, it's free. Like, do it now, because it's probably like a waiting line type of thing. There's 300 or 400 and something people, so I'm sure they're going to get kind of backlogged. So go ahead right now and send that email. I think it's bkx@digits.com. So make sure that you send that out right there. All right. Hey.
Amen.
Hey.
You're waiting on a piece of paper, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm waiting on a piece of paper with your
with
information.
With my intro?
Yes.
Would you like the live version? Hi,
yeah.
Guys.
Hey, so thank you for saving me. Sally was like, he's drowning. I got to go save him.
Wait, how amazing has Ben been today? He cracked the whip this morning in the most loving way, didn't he?
Did I have to pay you extra for that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So can I say one thing real quick?
Sure, please.
Is that okay? So I actually, in the green room, right during break, I was like, I read Sally's book a long time ago, and I went to Amazon, and I bought that book June the 6th of 2018. Way before this, right? 4 years ago. And I was literally fascinated with that book. And when I saw that she was available to be our keynote speaker, I jumped all over that. And she has been so freaking emphatic about delivering a wonderful experience to you. And I can't wait for her to share. I'm eagerly awaiting this. We'll do some Q&A at the end. Sally Hogshead.
And wait, there's a video. Ready? And roll the video.
Gentlemen, please welcome Sally Hogshead.
Hey! Hey! Isn't it great how Ben and I worked out that thing where the piece of paper didn't arrive, so we got to do what looked like impromptu socialization, right? I cannot wait to show you the data that we learned about you. It is unlike any other group that we have ever measured, and I have measured 1.3 million professionals around the world. So I'm excited to be able to show this to you. But first, I have a couple of questions. Raise your hand if you think you are more fascinating than the average person. Are you more fascinating than the average person? Raise your hand. Okay. Now, second question. Raise your hand if you think you're a better driver than the average person. Amazing how we overestimate ourselves. If we look at this on a bell curve, anybody in the room know math? Remember bell curves? Yeah? Okay. So on a bell curve, how much is above average and how much is below? Bam! Your guys are good. When you ask people to rate themselves, 80% of people say, yes, I'm a better driver than the average person. Now, is that possible? Is it statistically possible? No. But we overrate ourselves. If you ask them if they're better looking, 60% will say, yes, I'm better looking than the average person. Here's the best one. If you ask them if they're more intelligent, and I know you are because you know that 50% above average is the statistical norm. If you ask people, are you more intelligent than the average person? 90%! I mean, it's true in this room, but, you know. I asked a different question in my research. When I began studying the science of fascination, of communication, how do you stand out and brand yourself to make a difference in your small business, I asked, are you more fascinating than the average person? Are you more fascinating? And the results were completely different. Only 39% of people, 80% think they're a better driver, 39% think they're more fascinating. And when I first saw these numbers, my first thought was, well, that's sad. We underestimate ourselves. But here's what I've learned since then in my decade of research. When we can measure something, an attribute, like your ability to drive or your intelligence, we tend to be more confident. When we can't measure something, we feel insecure and awkward, and so we're more likely to underrate ourselves. I remember as a little girl, I had an unusual family growing up, and it wasn't just because my last name is Hogshead. When I was a little girl, my sister broke the world record in swimming, and she went on to win 3 gold medals and a silver in the Olympics. The same year, my brother graduated from Harvard, and I was still in a very, very awkward adolescent stage, so I had a huge competitive disadvantage. And so my mother told me something that I'll never forget. She said, you don't have to change who you are, Sally. You're the baby of the family, but you don't have to try to outswim or outthink or outdo anybody else. You don't have to compare yourself to anybody else, but you do have to figure out who you are. You don't have to change who you are. You have to become more of who you are, who you already are, to recognize that, and then go do it on purpose. And I'm going to show you what happened when my mom taught me that and how it was transformational for me. And I want to describe, when we think about why we're so willing to overrate ourselves as drivers and underrate our ability to communicate, the reason is this. We grew up being told to look at how we see the world. So how you as a bookkeeper see your client. How you see the people around you. But today there's a different model that's shifting very quickly, and it's how does the world see you? How does the world see you at your best? If I could give you a magic wand that said, okay, you have to choose. You can either choose to see how do you see your prospect or your client, or you could see how does your prospect see you? Who would rather know how you see your prospect? Right, that's good information. Wouldn't it be amazing if you knew how that person on the other side of the table sees you, and specifically sees you at your best? The reason why they admire you and champion for you and hire you and promote you and refer you. They can't refer you if they can't remember you. And so building on my background in advertising, I thought, well, we can measure a brand. We can measure a brand like Coca-Cola very, very easily. It's called a focus group. What if we could do the same for people? What if you could measure your personality, your personal brand, in the same way that Coca-Cola can measure how the consumer sees Coke? In a focus group, Coke doesn't care how Coke sees the consumer. Coke only cares how does the consumer see Coke, and specifically, how does the consumer see Coke as being different than Pepsi? What's the difference, and how do they make the most out of that difference? And marketing is called differentiation. So when you begin to think about this, here's what I'm going to propose. In a crowded environment, it's good to be better, but it's better to be different. Different is better than better. Different is better than better. And the reason why this is surprising for us to think about is because when you grow up in a world, there are strengths, and then you have weaknesses. In a world of strengths, there's one winner. There's one person who's the best. Everybody else isn't also ran. If you're not the best, you're not good enough. And then you have these weaknesses over here, and you have to fix the weaknesses, because the weaknesses in the area are the areas in which you're not good enough. That's a no-win game. And so to help describe what I mean by this, I'll take you on a quick stroll down the world of growing up with the last name Hogshead. And I'm married, and I didn't change it. I was beaten up on the playground every day. And I remember coming to my mother, Mrs. Hogshead, and saying, "Why can't we just have a name like Smith or Jones?" And she told me something I'll never forget. She said, "It's the thing about our name that makes it different, that will one day make you love it. It's the thing about you that makes you different, that makes people love you." And what I would propose is that those times when you were growing up, when you were made wrong, or you were disciplined, or you felt ashamed or insecure, that those were actually your most glorious, powerful, valuable traits that now we need to bring out, because your clients need you to bring that to the relationship. Here are my parents when they met in college on a date, and my dad introduced himself to my mother. "Hello, I'm Howard Hogshead from Hudson, Iowa." She laughed in his face and said, "Nobody's last name is really Hogshead." And now they, this is my mom. We just celebrated her 88th birthday with my dad. And we do in our house, we do what's called Hoggerfest. And we do Hoggerfest twice a year. This was October, which we've now nicknamed Hogtoberfest. But it's an opportunity for us to celebrate the birthdays of all the cousins who we call the piglets. And so one of the awesome things about Hoggerfest is just getting to watch my parents. I mean, come on, they've been married 68 years, and my mom's still getting some tongue action. I mean, that's pretty great. But remember what my mom taught me. You don't change who you are. Don't change who you are. Become more of who you are. Don't try to fit in. Don't try to fix what you've supposedly broken. Now, I was kind of a weird kid, so discovering who I was a bit of a journey. And this is the time that became, for me, one of the most painful but greatest epiphanies. As we know, I couldn't do swimming and I couldn't do academics. Those trees had been peed on. And so I did what you do when you can't do athletics or academics, and I was the creative one. And so I decided that I was going to do dance. Anybody here do dance? Dance, ballet, yes? Okay, what are jazz hands? Come on, jazz hands are the best part of dance. Spirit fingers? Spirit fingers? Okay, that's level two, more sophisticated. Okay, so I like to do jazz hands and be able to interact with the audience. And I was picked for a solo in the dance recital, but here's the problem. My dance teacher wanted to do something that was intricate, highly choreographed, with multiple steps. And no matter how much I rehearsed, no matter how much I practiced over and over and over again to get ready, sitting under the dinner table with my brother and my sister, my mom and my dad, and I was trying to remember the steps. And then it was the night of the dance recital, and I had the most awesome outfit. It was itchy, stretchy, too tight, highly flammable polyester. It was fantastic. And I remember I was backstage and I thought to myself, finally, I'm going to have the opportunity to find something that's mine, to find this light. Music started. My dance teacher looked down at me and she said, "Just don't forget the steps." So what happened? Yep. Okay. So here I was on stage, music started, and the steps just went completely out of my mind because they were intricate and they didn't feel natural and it felt like they were forced, and really I just wanted to do the jazz hands. And you've had a moment like this. I remember in slow motion the spotlight turning off. and the music ending, and looking back at my dance teacher who was ashamed because I didn't get it right. And I swore to myself I would never take another dance lesson ever again, ever. I never took another dance lesson ever after the age of 9. I gave up dance. What did you give up? Because you had a moment like this. It didn't necessarily happen on stage. It could have been when you were fired or a client quit or you had to close your business. You were kicked off the team. Your heart was broken. Somebody told you you weren't good enough. You're not doing it right. If you would just change, if you would just try harder, if you would just fix yourself, you know, just be a little bit better, then you'll be good enough. Sound familiar? Has anybody ever told you that who you are isn't the way you should be? That who you are, there's something fundamentally flawed about it? I mean, this is the whole psychology behind strengths and weaknesses. There's something very dangerous about telling kids what their weaknesses are. Because then we put all that effort. You know, you probably can remember a subject in school. Oh, this isn't your good subject. So you try and you try and try. Instead of taking all of that energy and that hope and that vision of the possibility of the area where you were already excelling, what would have happened if you took all that pain and struggle just to bring it up from a B minus to a B plus or a D minus to a D plus, what have you? I happen to know you're 90% more intelligent than the average person, so. But you know what I mean. And so I want to say right now, you don't have to change anything. You don't have to fix anything. Nothing's broken and nothing's wrong. But you do have to identify the areas in which you are ideal for your ideal client, and that when you work with your ideal client, being the person that you already are, that you haven't had to change, that you're simply maximizing what you're already doing right, it becomes really easy for that ideal client to find you, remember you, refer you, stick with you. And that is the ultimate way to grow a business, whether we have economic chaos, whether we have new technologies. If they can't remember you, they can't refer you. And in order for them to remember you, it can't be a transaction. Ben said something awesome today, and it was so awesome, I'm probably going to say it wrong. But what I heard in my head that he said was that transactions can be canceled, relationships can't. Right? Okay, well, what's the value that you're adding to the transaction? Because if it's just a commodity, that means your business is incredibly vulnerable because you have to start competing on the basis of price. And competing on the basis of price means there's no relationship, you have no security, and as Ben would call it, a moat. There's no moat. It's just a whole bunch of drawbridges of people leaving the business. So it's the key. It's good to be better. It's good to be better. But it's better to be different, because instead of modeling your bookkeeping business or your personal brand or any other aspect of your communication, instead of looking to see what other people are doing, to see who are you already at your best. Now, remember I showed you what it was like when I was on stage, and the humiliation and the sense of just wanting to fade. During economic difficult times, it becomes extremely difficult to stand out. It's so much easier to just want to kind of watch what other people are doing. Unfortunately, during this period of time, at the end of the last recession, the one before, about 2012, and I had 2 young kids at home. I was the sole breadwinner of the family. And it just seemed like the harder I worked, the further the goals got. The harder I worked, the sicker I became, the more exhausted I became, the more I missed my kids. And so I took a step back. I thought, well, I study what makes people memorable and how they stand out. Maybe it's time to reverse how I'm thinking about this. And I began realizing I don't need to be a speaker that's better than other speakers. You don't need to be a bookkeeper or a partner or a boss or a team member that's better than the other ones, but you do have to be who you are. And for me, that's being creative and passionate. And what you'll see when we start talking about your results is that my results are very different than your results, which means we are an excellent team. So after that period of time, I wanted to understand, as I kind of moved out of that, I wanted to understand, well, how does this apply in other industries? And so we started doing a series of tests. And I love financial services because financial services, just fundamentally, they're a commodity. Numbers are numbers. Results can often be achieved by other people. They're either a transaction or a relationship. And so we went in and we measured the four top high-performing groups inside of Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Berkshire Hathaway, on and on. We measured over 100,000 high performers in the financial services category. Now, I thought that what was going to differentiate the high performers would be skill, education, network, experience. I was wrong. The two things that differentiated the high performers, first thing was they delivered a specific benefit, So the ones that were detail-oriented were really detail-oriented, and they didn't focus on the big idea. Raise your hand if you are detail-oriented. Yep. You are 60% more likely than the average population to be detail-oriented. Raise your hand if you are consistent and stable. You are almost double the average population in your consistency and stability. And I'll describe that in just a minute. So the high performers knew how they were most likely to deliver, and then they doubled down on it. Second thing they did is they turned this into a specialty where they did it on purpose. So in your case, it would be like this: growing your business not around the kind of client that you necessarily want, growing your business around the type of problem that you are uniquely suited to solve. There are certain types of problems and certain types of needs from your clients that you are the ideal solution. On the other hand, you probably found, not naming names, but has anybody here ever had a client that drained them? Yeah. Okay. We're not going to call them a bad client. We're going to say a non-ideal fit client. When you have one of these clients, do you want to interact and meet with them? Do you feel more energized after the interaction? Are they going to refer more of the good kind of client to you? Is it possible they could damage your reputation? Is it possible they could even hurt your business? Yeah, so it's even more important to know who's not a right fit client than who is. And that's where the specialty comes in. If you're a detail-oriented person, you don't want a client who's going to be coming to you and saying, you know, just show me kind of a bunch of different options in 24 hours. I mean, detail-oriented people, raise your hand. That would kind of freak you out, right? But now, what if a client came to you and said, I want to reduce my spending because my kids are getting ready to go to college. I've given myself a couple of years to start to establish a plan. I need something that I can do a little by little, consistently. Detail-oriented people, could you do that? Raise your hand if you consider yourself a creative person. Does what I just described sound like taking a mechanical pencil and gouging it into your eyes? Creative people, if a client came to you and said, I want to see a bunch of options and I'd like to see them quickly, can we meet so you can kind of show me the universe of what's out there? Could you do that? Would you do that? And would that be energizing? Yes? Okay. So here are the two different things that the high performers do differently. They focus on what makes them different. Now, when I was in advertising, these were my clients, and I learned very quickly the only thing that matters in advertising is what makes the brand different, what makes the brand different than the competition. It's the same thing. They focus on what makes them different. And when you're fascinated by a brand that you love, you become intensely focused. You are intensely focused on them and what they're doing. And in these moments, your brains open up. So when your client is listening to you, when they're really listening to you, you are far more likely to be heard and to be remembered so that people take action. Now, when we look at extreme differentiation, what kind of dog is this? It's a guard dog, right? And what's a guard dog bred to do? Guard, right. Guard dogs have a very specific purpose. And they were bred very carefully, highly differentiated for that specialty, just like a detail-oriented person or a creative person. Now then we have a lap dog. A lap dog is usually not bred to guard, and if they are, they would become a little bit of a mishmash. But too often, this is what we do. When we get awkward or insecure, we are unlike any other animals in the animal kingdom. We start to play small. So instead of taking these glorious, extravagantly marvelous ways of being different, we begin to dumb ourselves down. Now, I'm going to take a slide with a bunch of turkeys, and I'm going to make a metaphor with Digital Bookkeepers Association. Now, turkeys are highly differentiated, and so were each of us, but I want to show you how I know that for sure. When we took a look at your results, this is a first look at the custom results of you, of the people in this room. Where's Tyler? Did you ever end up taking the test?
Uh-huh.
You did?
Yeah.
Lena, I want you to fact check if he actually did it, and we'll come back to you. Who did take the test? Yay, gold stars, everybody. Tyler, I'm just kidding. What was your result?
A maestro.
So who knows Tyler? Would you say that Tyler is confident?
Yes.
Would you say he's opinionated?
Yes.
Would you say that if you had a problem that needed a very strong vision, that Tyler could help you in doing this? Would you say that if I went over and asked Tyler some questions that he would be able to answer them?
Yes.
All right, let's give Tyler a round of applause. Hi, Tyler. It's good to meet you.
Hello.
Now, when you took the test, your archetype is the maestro. And I'm going to show you how to do this. Your primary power, so look along power. You have secondary prestige. Maestros are, I want you to read your three words.
Yes, ma'am. There we go.
Look, did you see how he suddenly got submissive?
There we go.
That's right.
I'm getting small here.
Yeah.
Ambitious, focused, and confident.
Now, if I said, Tyler, listen, we're going into this meeting, and the group's a little bit nervous. We need you to be strong. We need you to have presence. We need you to have opinions. Is that something that you could do? Yeah. Now, if I said, on the other hand, listen, Tyler, people are a little fragile right now. We've all just got to be careful to make sure that we're not stepping on toes. You could do that, right?
Sure.
But if I took it all the way to saying, listen, Tyler, we've already got this figured out. Sit in the corner. We really don't need any new thinking on this.
That's what you want.
Okay. All right. And what if I said, Tyler, for the rest of your career here in this company with the clients that you're going to be working with, what you have to say and what you do isn't really going to matter so much because you just got to keep doing the same thing.
That sounds like torture.
That sounds like torture, yeah. Right? Now, you know, for some people, they really love to be able to have something that they can replicate. And we're going to meet some of those people. So congratulations on being a maestro. And he really does live and breathe his archetype, right? Great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Tyler, can I ask you to hang on to this?
Okay.
Okay.
Do I stay standing or sit?
You can sit. Oh, good boy. So we just got a new puppy. It was such a great idea for the first, like, 12 hours, and then all of a sudden they wake up. And at first you're like, we are such good dog trainers. And the second thing is I'm just going to come out and say it. We got a doodle. We got one of the doodle dogs. And I was like, no, I'm a rescue person. But, you know, there is something to be said for a dog that doesn't shed, is endlessly cute, and everybody knows the last two syllables of its breed. Who else has a doodle? Okay, so here's the raw data. Now, when I first look at the raw data, you guys are amazing at how distinctive you are from the average population. Now, to you, this probably just looks like an Excel document. To me, this is a fingerprint. This is showing me, here's what I'm looking at. Of the 1 million professionals that we've measured, here they are. Boop, boop, boop. I want you to look at trust. Trust is the language of consistency. So your primary advantage that shows how you're most likely to naturally excel in communication, of the seven of them, We're going to go through each one quickly. Innovation means you change the game. There were not a lot of you that have primary innovation. Who has primary innovation? Yeah, there's like 11 of you. People with innovation love to be able to look in situations where everybody else gets stuck, and they're great at being able to rethink it. They can come up with those ideas quickly in a brainstorm. Primary passion personalities. Give me a woohoo. Small but mighty. This group is 64% less likely than the average population to have primary passion. Doesn't mean you're not passionate, it just means that's not the channel that you communicate in. So you want to know more about the facts and the data before you start getting into the emotion as a group. But my passion personalities, shout out to you. Primary power. Lots of primary power. You lead with authority. This is what Tyler is. It's what Ben is. It's being able to see, hunt the deer, and then achieve, and then overachieve, and set the next result. Primary prestige. You set the bar with higher standards. Kelly, our chief operating officer, has a very high use of prestige. Is that a surprise to anybody? Primary trust. Okay. Primary trust. That's right, raise your hand. Pretty much the whole room. Primary trust, you love to be able to make sure that you can guarantee quality control and consistency, which is incredibly valuable as a bookkeeper. There can also be challenges when there's chaos in the environment, when there's new technology. It's possible you want to interact, you want to have somebody on your team with innovation. Mystique, you listen before speaking, and you hate woohooing. Mystique personalities, give me a woohoo. Okay, so they're like five times passion personalities. Give me a woohoo. Okay. So here's kind of how you can think about it. Think about it, there are people on your team. The passion personality wants to come in and say, hey, I've got some ideas. Let's talk through them. Let's communicate and we'll coordinate. And the mystique personality is saying, just tell me what you've got as soon as you're finished with it. You know, I don't need to know how the sausage is made. It's kind of like this. Why don't you tell me you love me anymore? And the mystique personality says, I told you I loved you last year, and when that changes, I'll let you know. But teams that have combinations, like a winning combination is innovation plus alert. Huge, big picture thinking, very detailed specificity with meticulous follow through. So you can begin to think about your teams. Here are the average results of a million professionals, and this is your result. Average result, your result. So you can see this is very, very statistically significant. You are one of the highest groups scoring over-indexing on trust. Like I said, there are going to be some advantages to that, and there are potential disadvantages because one advantage is not better than the other. Alert. Okay, so trust, you are 93% more likely than the average population. I mean, that's huge. That's double the average population. Next, let's take a look at alert. You score really high on alert, so you're great at consistency and you're great at detail, 60% more likely than the average population. Here are your pie charts. Now, it's kind of fun to go in and take a look at this. Do you want me to email you this data that we're looking at? Okay, great. So we'll send this to you. Your archetype combines your top two advantages. Your archetype is your personal brand because it lights the way. The single most important part of your archetype are the words that are in your report on the archetype matrix sheet. So real quick, take out your archetype matrix sheet. Find your archetype. And here, remember, you have your primary advantage. Your primary advantage is the horizontal. Your secondary advantage is the vertical. And then when you identify your archetype, it's going to give you three adjectives. Now the question for you is, which of those three adjectives best describes how you are different than other bookkeepers? Let's take a look at Ben's report. I mean, just kind of Just kind of for instance, Ben is a change agent. There are only about 3 change agents in this room. Change agent is primary power, like Tyler, with innovation. So he has primary power, secondary innovation, his dormant, meaning the area he's least likely to over-deliver, and his details. Nothing wrong with that. That's a perfect structure to make sure he's surrounding himself with people who are. His 3 adjectives. This is page 3 of your report. His 3 adjectives are inventive, untraditional, self-propelled. Would we all agree? Yes? Okay, let's all give a Ben a woohoo! Okay, well, when we dive a little bit more deeply into his report, I'm going to show you something from page 5 that's going to come back to haunt him very shortly. Okay, let's take a look at Kelly's report. Kelly, very different, alert and prestige. Her 3 adjectives, productive, skilled, and detailed. And if we look on page 5, the editor-in-chief, it's you maintain high standards without losing sight of deadlines. If we compare that to Ben, what is not, like what should he not be doing? Not a fan of deadlines and step-by-step processes. You are more excited about instigating new plans than finishing them. See how it works? Okay, so now remember you have your primary, you have your secondary, and you have your words. Just so you have a sense of who you are in the room, this is taking a look at it with the analytics of which archetypes are more rare and which archetypes are more prevalent. Does anybody else like visuals? See, like for non-bookkeepers, we like dots. Now you can see, you cluster. Look down here. Look over in the area with alert, mystique, trust. That's where you have your highest populations. Your number one archetype, the most prevalent, is named the good citizen. 8.6% of you are one archetype. There are only 42 active archetypes. This means that you weren't just a little bit principled, prepared, and conscientious. You're really over-indexing in that. So you are an ideal fit for clients that are nervous, clients who are new, clients that maybe feel like they're on shaky ground, or they need somebody to hold their hand and walk them through the process. Your second most prevalent archetype is the mediator. Mediators, you guys, you really hate to woohoo. 1, 2, 3. Steadfast, composed, and structured. Of this group, 16% of you have the same top 2 advantages. Now, here's what this means as a group. If we were a group and we collectively were a team on a company, we would want to find clients that are looking for steadfast, principled, composed. We don't want to be looking for clients that are going to be wanting something crazy, to need a lot of face-to-face, to be an energy drain. Those would be the not ideal clients for this group. My archetype is I'm the catalyst. 3.6% of you are the catalyst, which means there must only be a 6. I don't know exactly. A catalyst. Catalyst is passion and innovation. We are out of the box, social and energizing. Now, here's how I first learned I was a catalyst. This was my pre-algebra report card in the 8th grade. My teacher writes, there's a fine line in math between being creative and being erratic. Like, how's that for a value judgment? I will continue to support Sally in using her creativity, but becoming more consistent in her work. Now, I was never going to be great at pre-algebra, but you know what? I would love to work with somebody who's a good citizen or a mediator, so if you rocked it with pre-algebra, let's go call Mrs. Stevenson after the conference. Is that a deal? Deal? Now, remember the use of the word erratic? The pitfall of the catalyst is that because catalysts are so creative, they need to work with somebody like a good citizen, somebody with primary alert, somebody with primary mystique or primary trust, because just as one person needs to have the consistency and stability, the other one needs new, fresh ideas. Here's a picture of my dad at Hoggerfest. He's 90, and he said, do you like my shirt? I said, I do. What was he talking about? He said, I'm wearing your Matrix. So let's do one really quick exercise. And Ben, I think this gets to count as my Q&A. Is that good? Untraditional Q&A? Okay. We're going to answer this question. My business is most successful when I am, and now I want you to go to your archetype matrix, and I want you to find the adjective. So you're going here. Okay, Tyler, you get to go first. You are the maestro. Could you please stand? My business is most successful when I am.
You guys hear it? There we go. My business is most successful when I'm ambitious.
When you're ambitious. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm going to take this a step further. Your business is most successful when you are ambitious. So we're going to take a look at how we can apply this. Tyler, what is a client's problem that you're seeing these days?
How to manage growth and manage their cash as they do it.
What's a typical solution for that?
Allocating funds ahead of time so they don't spend their money when they need it later.
And what's a way that you, because you're ambitious, are able to add value in a way that nobody else can to solve that problem?
We get in and we set everything up for them. So whether it's profit first method or something else, we get in there and kind of take the reins and basically say, hey, here's everything we've done for you, just don't screw it up. Mm-hmm. And we try and hold them accountable along the way.
Hey, I was here this morning for yours. That's not shocking.
No.
That was like a 7 on the 10 scale.
And I know Tyler. And I would say that his main advantage is asshole. I think that's a nice way of saying catalyst, and not the one right there.
So
No.
Well, speaking of not being detailed, I have a question for you. Our timer says that
I know a guy, so we go as long as we want.
Okay.
But until we got about 10 minutes more than that says.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, because
when we were waiting for you guys to come in.
I'm not detailed.
So, can you pick somebody else in this room that you would like to find out how they are building their business around the word that describes what makes them different?
Bob Dye.
Bob?
So Bob gets the microphone.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Yay,
Let's
Bob.
Give a round of applause
Yay,
for Bob.
Bob.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Bob.
Hi.
We're going to go through this really quickly. What's a problem that you are finding your clients need to solve?
Oh, boy. Unorganized financials.
I'm sorry?
Whenever they come to me as a new client, they are very unorganized.
Very unorganized.
Mm-hmm.
Like low details.
Yes.
Okay. How would most people solve that?
Hire
most,
a good
most
bookkeeper.
Bookkeepers.
How would most bookkeepers do a cleanup? And get it right.
What is the adjective that you chose to describe how you are different?
Skilled.
I'm sorry?
Skilled.
Skilled. I thought you said stealing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know.
That's a different talk.
No. You heard it here
the
first. Embezzlement is the new trend.
That was not my top one.
Yeah. Okay, skilled. Okay, are you familiar with how Bob... Could you describe as how this is about how the world sees Bob? We see mm-hmm. him as being skilled. He chose the word, but do you know Bob? Would you say Bob is skilled?
Yeah.
Yes, great. How does Bob being skilled help him solve the problem of disorganized clients better and differently than another bookkeeper?
I would say empathy.
Mm.
I would say empathy because he's stood in their shoes. And one of the things that we teach everybody and encourage you and implore you is to have a niche. And so Bob not only has a niche, he lived the niche. So empathy, to put himself in those shoes and go, yeah, that sucked for me too. Here's how I'm going to help you to fix it.
Would you say that everybody in the bookkeeping space is skilled?
I would say that, yeah. Well, there's
but
some,
there are a lot
bad ones.
There are a lot that aren't, right?
None in here.
None in here or online.
Oh, no. They're awesome here. But yes.
Bob, can bad things happen if a bookkeeper is not skilled and they have disorganized finances?
Absolutely.
Really bad or a lot bad?
Really bad.
Can bad things happen to the bookkeeper who gave unskilled advice for a disorganized client?
Yes.
Okay, so being skilled is not only desirable, it's absolutely crucial, especially in a market like this.
Yes.
Can I give you a signed book when we're done?
Yes, please.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we do one more?
Yeah, how about Tracy Swindle? Come on down.
Tracy.
You're the next contestant on Fascinate You.
Yeah.
Tell them what they won, Bob.
Thank you.
Actually, I did.
Thank you. Slap you for this. Hi, Tracy.
You had to pay extra.
Tracy, what was your adjective that describes how you're different?
Honestly, I was trying to look it up when he called my name.
What's your archetype?
That's what I was trying to look up because I was not prepared for this.
That's okay. You know,
last week was vacation, y'all. Yeah. So.
Well, hey, Tracy,
I've slept since then. Yeah.
Something that I think is really important to know is that there are those of us who are extremely comfortable jumping on stage without having any prep. That's one way of doing it. It doesn't mean that it's the best way.
Right.
A lot of times people that want to be able to center their thoughts to think things through are going to be a lot more valuable for clients who are going to be hanging on their every word. So,
right. So
the fact that you're being honest, you're giving, we're looking inside of your brain right now of what it's like when somebody puts you on the spot. So can I be a good client and say, would you like to come back in a minute?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Give it to Kirsten Reeder over here.
And also, you received an email about an hour ago telling you what your primary advantage is if you just need a little cheat sheet. Okay, who are we getting instead?
Kirsten Reeder.
Hey, Kirsten, how are you?
I'm good.
Hi. What is your archetype?
I am the anchor.
Ah, the anchor is the top three. We're good citizen, mediator, anchor. There are 20 anchors in the room. So you have primary trust, secondary mystique. That means you ground us and you hold us steady. Okay. That when everybody else is running around like a chicken with their head cut off, you keep things focused and on track.
Which is, I'm the chicken running around with the head cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
She has 9 kids.
Ah!
So whatever she wants to be, she can be.
Yeah, really.
She has to be 9 different things.
So what would you say is a problem that you're finding clients have?
In my particular niche, they don't know where their money is going and how to get it in. They don't know whether they're coming or going most of the time.
Does anybody else feel that way? GameStop, woo!
Yeah.
Okay, and so what's a traditional way of solving that problem? Not knowing where the money's coming or going.
Yeah, first of all, figuring out a plan to track how the money's coming in and going out and what to do with it.
Mm.
So that's been, I think, most beneficial for them.
Is it useful for a client who is in the very precarious position of not knowing where their money is coming and going to be able to have somebody who is an anchor to give them ballast and help them stay grounded on where they're going ahead next?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have an adjective that you picked?
Which one was it? Let's see.
Doesn't she just sound soothing?
Mm-hmm. It's like Delilah.
It's
like Delilah. Nobody does the old radio DJ, anyway.
Okay. Delilah. Okay, I know you're talking about.
Delilah.
Okay. I would say probably purposeful.
Mm. So when somebody is feeling like they're coming or going, they don't know where their money's going in and out, do they feel like they probably need a little bit of purpose?
Yes.
And a little bit of not just direction, but instruction.
Yes.
Do you feel like that's something that you can do?
Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
feel confident when a client comes to you and says, I need a better sense of purpose and instruction Really, yes. What I need is an anchor who sounds like Delilah. Could you... great. Thank you. So, so I want you to keep that word when you're talking to a new prospect, when you're thinking of whatever their problem is. I want you to think, how can I not just be purposeful, but be intentionally purposeful?
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Come up to me later, and I'll give you a signed book.
Okay. I got a sign. Yay.
All right.
Hi.
Long time no see.
Yay.
How you doing?
Good. Good. Thank you. Thank you for playing along. What did we learn?
I'm a trendsetter.
Ooh, bam, baby. Trendsetter, innovation, and prestige.
Yeah.
So trendsetters love to be able to see where things are going. It's not trendy, like as in clothing. It's trends of what's about to happen, being able to see around the corner. Mm-hmm. Do you find sometimes you get bored when people ramble?
OMG. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit.
Do you like to use acronyms like OMG?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. I me too.
Yeah,
OMG.
Yeah.
Okay. So, of the trend-setting words, which word best describes how you're different?
That's a hard one, though. I'm going
because
to
you're creative. You want to pick the right one.
Right. Because they can all mean so many different things, and so I guess I have to go with the word progressive.
Would you like to walk this one through with her?
No.
The problem?
No. No, I'll let you do that.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
So.
What's a problem that your clients are facing?
There's a vast array of issues, but the ones that concern me the most are the ones that are strapped for cash, and I can guide them to the light, but they inevitably make bad choices on how to spend the cash they have. So.
And Ben, you described that really well today when you were saying if they're strapped for cash now, it's going to be terrible in a year. And you talked about having hard conversations about saying, you may show me your top two paid employees, or maybe don't take out that $10,000 a month,
right?
Yeah,
et cetera.
And that's something that spoke directly to me when he was saying that, because I recently had a conversation with a client where I said, you need to hire the girl that's not doing anything in the office, or fire her, I'm sorry, and you need to cut your salary and quit stopping at every restaurant in town on the company card. If you're going to eat it off the clock with your own debit card.
So let me ask a question. If a client is coming to you and they're saying, I know I have some troubles, you can see I have significant troubles, would it be an authentic way for you to communicate to say, I'm looking not at where we are today or where you've been. I'm looking in a progressive way to see two steps beyond where you can see to where your money is going to be going, or in this case, where your business is not going to be going.
Yes.
That is not a form of communication that a lot of people would be comfortable with. A lot of personalities don't want to have that conversation that's framed up that way, and yet the clients that you talk to in a way that where you are being who you are. You're not changing who you are, but you're delivering it in a way that they can hear that maybe sets off the alarm bell now, but then gives them a thriving company in the future is a tremendous gift for you to be able to give.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
Thank you for coming
Take some questions from there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, hey, another round of applause for Sally. That's amazing. So, and I want to hire you. So we have time for about three questions probably. So if you have a question specifically for Sally, and if you don't, what is wrong? I know that you have, there's one burning question in my mind that every one of you should have. So if you have a question, there's a microphone right here.
I'm a Virgo.
Come up to it. It's
and I have
Kirsten.
Eight kids, but you definitely beat me on that one.
Nine. You have eight?
Nine, I have eight.
You have, oh, wow.
I do.
Wow. Who's got more than nine? We'll play a contest. Anyway, all right. So.
One of the questions, so trust is my primary thing, and like consistency and whatever else it said. I don't feel consistent, but I know that it was saying that it's how they perceive you, not how you perceive yourself or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How can you, I guess, lean into that? Like, I don't
Great
feel
question.
Consistent,
yes.
But others, I guess.
It's Kirsten,
I
right?
I don't know. Yes.
Who was it? Laura? Who's the trendsetter?
Tracy.
Tracy, can I ask you to come up just for a sec with Kirsten? Okay, so Tracy is the trendsetter. That means she's very creative with very high standards. She is a racehorse that is best suited to problems that need to be solved with a very sharp knife, looking ahead at new information. Kirsten, would you be comfortable if we took Tracy's scenario where Tracy said people are getting all the way off course, they don't have a clear sense of their finances. Could you crack the whip? I mean, would you be comfortable? Right?
What you said to her about like, how she would solve the problem, I was like,
no. Okay, do you remember what we're talking about? That Tracy, because she's progressive, that she can say, look, we're at a turning point here. Your business is either going to thrive or it's going to die, and I can see where we're going, and my recommendation is this. Kirsten, you would not communicate it like that, would you?
No.
But can I give you the words of how you might communicate it as an anchor?
Yeah.
The economies change, politics change, people change. There are certain principles that stay true no matter what. We can look back hundreds of years with economic cycles. I'm going to stick with you, and we're going to make sure that we do every step we possibly can without doing anything radical.
Oh.
Would that be you?
Yeah, more.
That's the difference between an anchor and,
yeah.
Between
an
anchor
idea,
and a trendsetter.
This is a bad idea, having them both up here.
Yeah.
Weird stuff.
Did you guys see what I was talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Ben Day.
I still need 2 minutes at the end.
Okay, sure.
Hi.
So my question was basically that, so I'm going to pivot slightly.
Oh, no. Well, wait, what's your archetype?
I'm a victor.
So you're going to pivot because you don't want to look bad, because victors are very achievement-oriented, and like somebody stole your thunder.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
That is Ben Day.
Oh, may I ask your name?
Benjamin.
Benjamin, you just reminded me of something. Okay. Right before I came on, when I was watching our sponsor with digital, when they made an offering, wasn't that significant?
Yeah.
They put a lot of thought into that. See this? I put a lot of thought into this too. Actually. So my team would like to offer a free code that you guys can share with your team so that you can do what we're doing. Thank you for reminding me of this. I'm going to put this up on the screen in just a minute. And that's how I know they're going to stay here and not go to lunch.
There you go. Actually,
I'm going to tell you now just so we have it. Okay, so it's the same code that we had. BKX22, the word share. BKX22, share, all one word. And it's going to be the quick and easy version of the test, so that way you can have the same kind of conversations about how do team members fit together.
We can post that in social too, so. Also, anyway, does that have anything to do with business?
Oh, yes. You pivot?
I did, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, and we do, so I use different tests like this, so we're for sure going to do that. With my team, and the number one piece of feedback that I get from my team members is, that doesn't feel like me at all. Like, point for point, none of these adjectives line up with me personally, but maybe professionally. Is there, like, a good bridge, or is there a good way for us to train our team and encourage them in their strengths and their adjectives, or is there a piece of this that I'm missing somewhere between personal and professional?
Tyler, can I? Oh, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to show us up here. Yes. Okay. So, your archetype is not a box. It simply lights the way to how you are most probable to add the most value in the most situations, but you're not locked in. When you want to think about, so you have primary prestige. Mm-hmm. Go along the prestige, see the purple, prestige, avant-garde, connoisseur, victor, etc. When you're with your kids, You might be a connoisseur, being fun and playful, and hey, I've got an idea. Let's, you know. Whereas when you're with a client who's not being well behaved, you may have much different. You may slip into a mode called the double trouble, which would be the imperial. So look along those words. And so when you're talking with people, remember with this test, it's not how you respond to the test. Show it to somebody else, and it's how does it fit how they see you. Does that?
Yes, totally helps. Absolutely.
And victors are very results-oriented, and so I appreciate your questions so that I can help you get better results.
That's what it's all about. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Now, I want to be respectful of our time. Because
we got probably time for one more. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We're over time anyway.
Hi.
I'm Becky Frampton. I scored as the Maverick leader.
Yee-hoo! So is my husband.
I noticed that when I took the test. My question would be, how can we use this best to find people who fit in with us, just like with Ben and his wife? They fit together perfectly. So how can we use this when we're building our teams? Like for myself, I have a wonderful team, and most of them fit into that cooler color where I'm more in the warm color. But whenever you're talking about most people in this room are down there in that cool color, who is it that they need on their team to help them be the most successful, and how do they find that person?
Great question. The answer is it all depends on what you're trying to achieve. I'm a catalyst. My husband is a Maverick leader, which means we score really high in creativity. We can pick a cool new restaurant like nobody's business. And we don't get stuck in a lot of forced structure. You know, with 8 kids, we're super flexible. But on the other hand, there are times where we need to make sure that things are going to be managed that doesn't create stress for other people. And that's when we start to bring in people who score very high in alert and very high in trust. I hire for 3 top advantages: trust, alert, mystique. Because those are going to optimize me, as you need to be surrounding yourself with people who can that you're providing something that for them would be very expensive in terms of resources. So that's why Ben's dormant is alert. Kelly's secondary is alert. So she scores really high and he scores really low, which means I imagine that makes for some interesting conversations. But don't you find that that works as, your team shouldn't replicate you, your team should optimize you.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of my husband, may I say thank you? And can I tell a quick story?
Absolutely. You can do whatever you want.
Wrap us up?
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't want food.
Okay.
It's bologna sandwiches today anyway, so.
Okay, I'm gonna show you the world's most competitive marketplace. Most competitive. Raise your hand if you've ever done online dating. Did it work?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I first started studying fascination, and we all know you have to be able to get somebody's attention immediately, I thought, well, this is the perfect metaphor. I'm going to go online. I'm going to open up an account. I'm going to see, how's this going to go for me? What I learned very quickly is it's slim pickings out there. I love the guy in the corner who's like, get it while it's hot. And then there's like the miner who's, let's get it on. But I want to point you to the guy who says hi. Here's what I learned. Hi is the number one most common introduction because it's easy. It's non-confrontational. It works for all purposes. It's like Gap khakis. And so we took a look at this guy, Ed. And what I realized is Ed could be going onto an online dating site like Match. He could have the perfect woman out there, the absolute perfect ideal bride. But if he gets lost, just like if you get lost when your clients are trying to find you, when people are trying to connect with you, once you get lost, you're in trouble. Now, you don't have to worry about that if you're like the best looking guy on the site. But let's take a look. Now, what would happen if we took Ed's profile, and instead of saying hi, it said this: I have a tan, all my teeth, I read books without pictures, and I watch movies with dialogue. I'm looking for a girl who appreciates the finer things in life, but is willing to settle for me. That's a little more fascinating, right? Well, I have a secret. That's exactly what my husband's profile said. So for any sales situation, attracting any kind of a prospect, I recommend don't be the high guy. I want you to think about what we've learned. Think about the one way in which you are most likely to add value. And now I'm going to send you out for a big lunch, and I can't wait to see you. If you have more questions, we'll be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Sally Hogshead, thank you.
Thank you.
That was so awesome. Thank you.